Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. With rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability, a lot of anxiety out there. Our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. The power buying process. They'll verify your income, assets, credit in under 24 hours and give you a verified approval. Then you have the strength of cash buyer, which is important when you're out there in the real world. Once verified, you qualify for the all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They'll lock in your rate up to 90 days while you shop. If rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate drops. You can't lose, man. Either way, you're going to win. Get started today. Go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam. Dawson.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Today, Adam sits down one-on-one with Larry Elder. And now, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. And I'm sitting here with great Eldersky. Larry Elder, I'm a big fan of this man. You should listen to his radio show, The Larry Elder Show. And you should check out his podcast or download it like I do. Radio show is on 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. and it's on 870 The Answer, AM 870 The Answer out here in Los Angeles. But go to LarryElder.com, listen to the pod, and which is the radio show, and you shall be hooked. Good to see you again, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me, Adam. I appreciate it.
So I ran into Larry. I've always been a fan of Larry Elder. I'm a fan of anyone who speaks the truth, not their truth, but the truth, and is logic-based. And for that reason, I'm attracted to folks like you and Dennis Prager, and I have friends that are on the left that are logic-based as well that I'm very attracted to as well. It's not really a party line thing. It's what reality is. And when I ran into you at an event for Dennis Prager and I asked you to come on the show and I was excited that you accepted, I thought instead of doing a regular show, it's not often that I have Larry Elder on the program and we should just focus on a subject, which is one you know better than any person I've ever heard, and that's race. So with that in mind, let's start by telling my audience your background and where you came up, and let's sort of set the table for who Larry Elder is, and then as we move on and get into Larry Elder's opinions, which are facts, then we'll know where you're coming from.
Well, born and raised in L.A., initially in an area called Pico Union, and then we moved to South Central L.A. when I was about 7 years old. Thus, the name Sage from South Central. I went to...
Well, how about the Prince from Pico Union?
And, of course, the Czar of Common Sense.
Sure.
Don't forget that one. And I went to four high schools. Crenshaw, the one that was featured in the movie Boys in the Hood. I went to a school called Fairfax, which at the time was almost all Jewish. I was involved in some academic program, which is why I went to some of the other high schools. Then I went to college in Rhode Island at Brown. Then I went to law school at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And then I ended up going to Cleveland working for a big law firm for a few years and then started a small company placing lawyers with law firms and corporations, sold that, and went to, into TV and radio about 25 years ago back here in L.A.
Your dad was uneducated, grew up in the South, Jim Crow, military.
His mother could neither read nor write. He never knew his father.
Right. So very humble beginnings.
In fact, my father doesn't even know his birth date because when he was born, he wasn't born in a hospital, born in the back of a room, and his mother could neither read nor write, so she didn't even write down his birth date. So he knows the year but doesn't know his birth date. And when he enrolled into kindergarten, the teacher says, "What's your birth date?" He says, "I have no idea." So she wrote down hers, May 25, and so that's how we celebrate it. I told my dad he has a 1 in 365 chances of this actually being the correct date, so who knows.
He worked hard as a janitor, worked multiple jobs, ended up opening a small little diner and doing every job, cook and janitor and accountant and everything else, they made it work.
Now, my mom, Adam, very different background. My mom was almost like royalty. She grew up in Huntsville, Alabama. My dad was Athens, Georgia. My mom had 1 year of college. Now, when you go away to college and you're in the South in those days and you come back, you're educated, whether you have a degree or not. You just went away to school. She came back. She was deemed to be educated. And so my father and my mother had very disparate educational backgrounds. My mother lived on a farm that was owned by her family. And during the Great Depression, my mother said it just flew right by us. In fact, we had surplus food we sold to people in the country. So they had a very, very different background. And my mother and my father, though, always believed in hard work, always believed in education. There was no question I was going to go to college. The only question was which one.
I should tell folks that are listening, the show is brought to you by Quicken Loans, and you can go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. Castrol Edge, titanium strong for maximum engine performance, and MedMen. Go to MedMen.com. Let them know I sent you. We're condensing the format a little bit from our usual format because Larry's here and we're doing sort of a special one-off show. So you come from very humble origins. It's interesting that you bring up Fairfax High, Fairfax predominantly Jewish. I always tell people, I went to North Hollywood High, and I got a very good look at how different groups worked. Because at North Hollywood High, I don't know if there's any other school that had this sort of ethnic breakdown or socioeconomic breakdown happening at once. You know, when you went to Crenshaw, you went to Crenshaw, and when you went to Fairfax, you went to Fairfax. They were different animals. When I went to North Hollywood High, we had just sort of white trash kids like myself, just from the Valley, the North Hollywood area. And parents, a lot of the same problems that the inner city had, some substance abuse, some divorce, some broken up families and things like that. Real working class, normal stuff. So we had a few of those kids, was predominantly those kids. Then we had some Hispanic kids. The Hispanic kids were a little deeper in the Valley. They had, the parents seemed to be intact, but they were much more blue collar and much more, little less academic oriented, a little more like graduate high school and go to work with dad as a Mason, you know. Then there was the black kids that were bussed in from the inner city. They came from poverty and broken families. And then there was a small group of Jewish kids who grew up in Studio City, affectionately known as Hebrew Heights, the Hills, the Donnas, they called them, because the streets were all Donna Pegida and Donna Dolores and Donna Sangria, all up in there.
I know those streets.
You know those streets. Those kids came down the hill. They came down Laurel Canyon, and they, too, went to North Hollywood High. So now you have these four or five different groups all at North Hollywood High. Well, it took young Adam Carolla about 10 minutes to realize that Robbie Levine and Nate Wittenberg and Jeff Buck from The Hill, these guys were getting better grades. They were in student government. As a matter of fact, the thing that's funny, if you look at student government, you look at the president, the vice president, treasurer, and the council people, it's all the every single Jewish kid, that's what made up the school. That's what made up the government. And there were no, you know, a handful of black kids, Hispanic kids, white kids, whatever, but they played sports. And then when we graduated high school, barely, they went off to Cal, Stanford, and UCLA, and we all wandered onto a construction site, picked up a shovel, and started digging ditches. Mm-hmm. That's where the black kids, those were the white kids, those were the Hispanic kids. There was no difference between poor and white, poor and black, and poor and Hispanic. We all wandered onto the same job site and picked up the same shovel, but the Jewish kids headed off to Stanford. And it was at that point I thought, what are they doing? What's different? What's going on?
Right.
What different in their equation than what we're all doing?
I had the same experience growing up. The elementary school I went to, the first one, 10th Street School, most of the kids were white. All the teachers were white. I then went to 74th Street School to finish when I moved to South Central. All the teachers were white. I would say it's about 50-50, the student body. Then I go to Crenshaw. Crenshaw is 95% black. The 5%, except for the son of James Hahn, who later on became mayor, the 5% were Asian kids, mostly Japanese, some Chinese. I think a couple of them were Korean Americans. I graduated number, I think, 6 or 7 in my high school class. There was one other black kid who had better grades than I did. Outside of that, the other four were the Asian kids. And I had a kid, a friend of mine named Robert Tan. And I asked Robert Tan one time why he got so upset when he got a B. And he said, if I come home with an A, my parents tell me it was an easy exam. If I come home with a B, they tell me I didn't work hard enough. They all worked harder, spent less time on sports, less time goofing around, less time worrying about clothing and women, and they were focused on academics. And when they graduated, same experience, they all went off to these prestigious elite schools, and some of the others went to jobs and so forth. But there clearly was a difference in emphasis, in culture, in concern about academics compared to the black kids, night and day.
I'm not sure why that is something that we've deemed a taboo subject. I feel like we're pretty good as a society in telling people if black people smoked at a higher rate than Asians and they wanted to put up more billboards in Crenshaw and parts of the black community, then I feel like the leaders would jump up and say, wait a minute, this is a health issue. Right. You're hurting these people. Something needs to be done. And we would have a discussion about it. We've had many discussion about many, many things that are negative to the black community. This family and education thing is not on the table to discuss. I've tried it at the Huffington Post a few times. I was literally sitting there talking with the host. She was explaining to me that the school to pit, she was explaining to me the school to prison pipeline. She was talking to me like it was the monorail at Disneyland. Like, hey, they're building a school to prison pipeline. I said,
and
they don't exist.
Once you graduate from high school, you walk out, they scoop you up, you put you on the train. Next thing you know, you're in Sing Sing.
She was literally discussing it with me like it was the Channel going from, you know, England to France.
Yeah, Hillary used to use that expression during the campaign. The jail to, no, school to jail pipeline.
Right.
You have to do something to go to jail. Most notably, commit a crime. Almost always hurting somebody else. That's how you end up in jail. You don't want to go to jail, don't commit a crime. I'm sorry, Adam, I feel the same way about these high-profile school shooting, police shootings. Eric Garner in New York, Freddie Gray in Baltimore, Michael Brown in Ferguson, Sandra Bland in Texas. The common theme here If you'd complied, you'd still be alive. What is so complicated about following the orders? Even if you don't like the orders, even if you feel the orders are illegal, the Supreme Court says you still have to follow them. And if you feel you're mistreated, get a badge number and then deal with it while you're still alive. Why is that so complicated? Why aren't our so-called leaders telling young people, when you're pulled over by the police, put your left hand at 10 o'clock, your right hand at 2 o'clock, say yes, sir, say no, sir, make sure your paperwork is in order, and if you feel you're mistreated, get a badge number and settle it later. They're not saying that. They're talking about police brutality. And what that ends up doing is hurting the very people that these so-called leaders claim they want to care about. Crime has gone up in Chicago. Crime has gone up in Ferguson, in St. Louis, right outside Ferguson. Crime has gone up in Baltimore, where there were protests over these officers. Why? The officers realize there's no upside. There's no upside in my being proactive. I'll respond to the 911 calls, but I'm not going to put my butt on the line anymore. And I, God forbid I should hurt some black kid, and now I'm a racist, and I'm a national figure, and they could threaten to take away my pension, let alone put me in jail. And as a result, the bad guys are becoming more emboldened, the cops are becoming more and more passive, and the numbers of officers being shot right now are about 50% higher than they were at the same time last year, in part because bad guys are being emboldened and a few officers are being targeted for execution because of this perception that there is this vendetta against black people. Colin Ferguson should be ashamed of himself for what he started. This whole thing was all about the perception that black people were being routinely mistreated by the police. The stats just don't show that. In fact, it's the opposite. Police are more reluctant, more hesitant to use deadly force against a black suspect than a white suspect for all the reasons that I mentioned. It is not true. It's the biggest racial scam that I've seen in this country since USA Today tried to convince us that white arsonists were burning black churches, which turned out to be a completely, completely bogus story.
Okay, so I have a million thoughts. One is, when you have the president of the United States talking about the Ferguson effect, When you look at that story, that is not a story of a young gentle giant being gunned down from behind by a racist police officer. That is not the story. If you're going to turn it into that story, you're going to get a lot of cops sitting in their cars and not getting involved. And I have no idea why you would want to get involved if you're a cop these days in that situation. But also, you're doing damage, and the damage is psychological damage. You're making people feel like there's a target on their back, and I can't imagine a more debilitating message to send to any group. I would much rather one of my kids be confined to a wheelchair than convinced society had it out for them. I came home last night. I did a comedy show last night, and I came home late, about 10:30, and I walked in the front door, and my 12-year-old daughter was crying, and my wife was trying to console her, and she was very upset that she didn't make the volleyball team. She tried out for the volleyball team in her new junior high in the 7th grade. Her friends had made the team. She hadn't made the team. She's very upset. And she kept saying, the coach had it out for me. He doesn't like me. He's not going to let me on the team. The girls who are on that team who didn't even want to be on the team or didn't care as much as I, but it's because the coach doesn't like me and I can never make. I said, well, you'll make the team next year or next semester or next whatever. And she said, no, because he doesn't like me. And I thought, first things first, that is the worst posture and the worst attitude ever. Secondly, as a parent, I must convince her immediately that this is not the case because I don't want her walking around thinking the reason she either makes the team or doesn't make the team or gets the grade or doesn't get the grade or gets the job or doesn't get the job or gets the ticket or doesn't get the ticket from the police officer is because the person likes them or doesn't like them, especially when it's based on nothing. So it was funny because she was crying and sort of feeling sorry for herself. And I said, Natalia, how many girls tried out for this team? And she said, 25. And I said, how many girls made the team? And she said, 13. And I said, okay, so just about half. So half, first off, does he not like the other 13 or 12 girls he cut from the team? And she said, no, he doesn't know. Like, you're already answering your own question. Right. And then I said, all right, where do you reckon you came in? Let's be honest. Let's say you were at the volleyball practice tryouts and you were just sitting up in the bleachers and you were just watching. You weren't you. It wasn't you watching you. You were just watching. Where would you rank yourself out of those 25 girls or out of the 13 girls that made the team? Where would you rank yourself? And she said, 11. And I said, all right. My wife, who was sort of half listening, did that move where she went, you're giving yourself 11 out of a 1 to 10 ranking? I said, sweetie, you got to be in the conversation or out of the conversation. You can't be drifting in and out of the conversation. No.
Coming into the movie in the middle, and she's right, trying to explain the plot right to you. Come on.
So I said, you got to get here during the previous. So I said, no. So you've given yourself number 11 out of 13. And that's you grading you. So you could be 12. I mean, you're very close to the cutoff line by your own admission. So do you still think it's because the coach has it out for you? And she said, yes. And I said, but still you have yourself ranked in the bottom, 10%. And how do you think it behooves the coach? He wants to put the best volleyball team out there and give himself the best chance of winning out there. Why do you think he would take skilled players and keep them off the squad and hurt his chances to win just because he had some sort of personal vendetta, which is based on I know not what, because you guys don't have a lot of history together. But I was tired. I'd been doing stand-up all night. It was 10:30. It was time to have a drink and watch Tucker Carlson. And I made myself spend a half hour talking her out of the notion that she was held down because of this person's personal vendetta versus her performance.
Imagine a kid coming home feeling the same way, except there's no Adam Carolla, there's no dad in the house to give her that half hour lecture.
Right.
You did your job as a parent and did it masterfully, by the way. The reason, by the way, I believe she said that she's still feels that the coach was out to get her is because she realized you made your point and she didn't want to concede it probably
right
to dad right away. Look, Donald Trump did something very similar about the NFL players kneeling. Donald Trump said to the NFL players, look, this thing is all about police brutality, about the unfairness of the criminal justice system. Bring me a list of the people who have been treated unfairly by our criminal justice system and I will examine it. And if there's merit, I will pardon them or I will let them out. And 3 or 4 days later, 4 or 5 players wrote a joint letter. It was published and it said, it's not about a handful of pardons. It's about a widespread systemic yada blah, et cetera. Now, wait a second. Back up. You're telling me all these police officers are routinely pulling over black people. Black people are being arrested for no reason. They're being prosecuted for no reason. They're being convicted for no reason, and they're being incarcerated for no reason. And all there is a handful of people that have been treated unfairly. And there's no list. There's no large number of people that you have at the ready. How can that be? If all this injustice is taking place, give me the names. Where are they? CNN ought to have, if they were as fair and balanced as they claim they are, they'd have a clock right in the corner. It's been X number of days, it should tick and keep clicking and turning over, X number of days since President Trump has asked the NFL players to bring him a list of people in prison who have been convicted unfairly, and they haven't done so yet. They should be turning it over every day. Where is it? It ought to be pretty easy to bring up a bunch of people. Who are the people that have been convicted unfairly? Give it to me.
I want to talk to you about cops, and it's funny. I have to walk this weird, funny line because Mark Garagus sits where you sit often. I do a show with him called Reasonable Doubt. Of course, he's got a lot of news about Colin Kaepernick and so on and so forth. And I said, And I think you said Colin Ferguson earlier.
Colin Ferguson was the guy that murdered a bunch of people in the Long Island subway years ago.
And wanted to appoint himself his own attorney or something like
that.
Right. But you meant Colin Kaepernick.
Kaepernick.
And then there was Ferguson, the Ferguson effect.
Yeah.
So my head was swimming. Anyway.
Too many Fergusons.
I've said to Mark Garagus, because I like Mark Garagus, and I think you would like Mark Garagus as well, although you probably don't agree with what he's doing with Colin Kaepernick.
I didn't know he was involved. He represents him.
He's very involved. And I said, my only beef with the entire situation is it's based on a falsehood.
Right.
It's based on a statistical falsehood. I don't, you know, him championing causes and taking knees and being an actor who takes on causes. I have no problem with any of that. There's one problem. The problem is the flaw in the math of the cops disproportionately going after black people. And he accepts that. But I want to hear, because I know you know those numbers, and I know you know those statistics, and I know you know that. I'm going to tease it, but I'd like to hear your opinion on Kaepernick and this. It's by the way, it's just a truth. If you say to people, look, statistically, there's really nothing to back up the claim that white cops are shooting unarmed black people, they go, oh, get out of here. Right. Come on. Like, you don't.
Because nobody ever asks.
Right. You know that's what's going on. And I go, no, it's not what's going on statistically. And they go, oh, please. And they just walk away. They know it. Now, perpetuating this seems irresponsible, negative, and dangerous. So for all the white people at Huffington Post, I feel like that's a horribly irresponsible message to put out there, and you're going to get more people shot. But I don't know why you don't think of it that way. I mean, maybe you just want clicks or you want to make money. You can find me in the HuffPo lady at some point. I'll tell you about the Castro Ledge, and I'll tease that for a second. Heat, friction, viscosity, breakdown. They rob your engine of maximum performance. Friction results in a loss of performance of up to 10%. Castro Ledge, engineered with fluid titanium technology, it physically transforms to be stronger under pressure, helps fight against friction, deliver maximum levels of performance for your car, 3 times stronger against viscosity breakdown than the leading oils. I use this stuff. You should use it. The full synthetic is the way to go, and Castro Ledge makes the best full synthetic out there. It's your life's blood. It's your second biggest investment, your car. Actually, if you're me, it's my biggest investment because I got so many of them, and they're all full to the brim with Castro Ledge. Unlock the true performance in your car's engine with Castro Ledge. Castro Ledge, engineered with fluid titanium technology. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come right back, and I will have the great Larry Elder answer that question about police brutality as it pertains to African Americans right after this. Hey, it's Adam Carolla.
It's Mark Garagus.
We do a show called Reasonable Doubt.
Best hour in the universe.
Sometimes 54 minutes.
And sometimes we've been known to do 48 minutes as well, and sometimes an hour six.
Either way, we round up. Best hour. Like Mark Bill.
It's exactly like in 6 minute intervals. Exactly.
Every Saturday on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Subscribe to Reasonable Doubt, the best hour in the universe. With Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla. Every Saturday on Podcast One, Carolla Digital, and Apple Podcasts.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly VeriScan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Okay, Larry Elder in studio with me. The radio show is fantastic, and it's 6 to 9 p.m. It's every night. It's 870 The Answer out here, a.m. But go to LarryElder.com and download that podcast. It's a couple of bucks a month, and it's the best money you'll ever spend because you will get a lot of free or almost free wisdom from the great Elder.
Almost free.
Police shootings. I think most Americans just assume that white cops shoot black men, unarmed black men, at a disproportionately high rate.
And the answer is, and the truth is, that that's just flat out false. There is a black economist named Roland Fryer at Harvard. He is the youngest tenured professor in the history of Harvard. He's supposed to be brilliant. Because of all these high-profile shootings, he decided to do some research. He said, I'm not a protester, but I'm somebody who gathers data. And he said, I'm assuming what you assume, that there was a disproportionate number of police officers mowing down unarmed black people for no real reason. He says he was stunned by his research. He looked at 10 cities, thousands of police shootings, including fatal ones. And he found out not only did this not take place, but the police were more hesitant to pull the trigger on a black suspect than a white suspect. It confirms studies that were done by a couple of professors at Washington. But more than that, the Washington Post, which is no neocon publication, looked at all of the shootings that took place in the country a couple years ago. There were 1,000. 250 of them were black. 500 of them were white. There were 17 unarmed black men killed by the police. There were about 25 unarmed white men killed by the police. I defy your audience to name a single unarmed white person who's been killed by the police. But if you're an unarmed black person, in comes Van Jones, in comes Don Lemon, in comes Chris Cuomo, giving you the impression it happens often. Any given year, about 300 Americans are injured by lightning. Now, lightning does not strike you based upon even proportions of race and gender, but assuming it did, and black men are 7% of the population, that means around 21 black men would have been injured by lightning. You are more likely as a black man to be injured by lightning than to be an unarmed black man killed by the police. It is rare. And the reason that the numbers of blacks are half the numbers of whites, even though blacks are only 13% of the population, whites are about 60%, is because there's more violence within the black community, particularly among young black men. A young black man is 7 or 8 times more likely to be killed than a young white man. The number one preventable cause of death for young white men, accidents, including car accidents. The number one cause of preventable death for a young black man, murder, almost always at the hands of another young black man. There were 6,000 homicides of black people last year. Almost all of them were killed by other black people. I mentioned 17 unarmed black men killed by the police. And unarmed does not mean not dangerous, as you pointed out about Michael Brown from Ferguson. This is a guy who had his DNA on the officer's gun. The 12-year-old who was killed in Cleveland had a replica gun, so you can argue he was unarmed, but he had a gun that the police assume was a valid gun. The officers were exonerated.
I'm gonna put your point to the test, and as you discussed, which is, of course, if every time a young black man was shot by an officer, provided that officer was white, especially Van Jones and the CNN News Patrol pulled up, and every time a white man was shot by a cop, black or white, it was never reported, then of course the public at large would only assume that black men were being shot by cops. If they only reported bull shark attacks and never great white shark attacks, then all you ever heard was bull sharks attack swimmer and you never heard another one, even though that was happening. You would just assume the only shark that bites swimmers is a bull shark. That's your only choice as a consumer. As you sit on your sofa and turn on MSNBC, that's your only choice. The most egregious and grotesque, and I don't use that word very often, shooting of an unarmed civilian by cops took place in, I think it was Mesa, Arizona. Mark Garagus, the aforementioned Mark Garagus, represents the family, the widow of the man, and we'll figure out the names. There's so many names floating around my head. And I don't know if you're aware of this shooting, and I don't know if you've ever seen footage of the shooting. It is not a police shooting. It is a police execution of a citizen. If this young man was, Daniel Shaver's his name, if this young man was black, not just the state of Arizona would be on fire, the United States would be on fire. This guy, and I can show you a little bit of the footage of it, it is so disturbing to watch that I'm hesitant to even bring it up, but I feel like you need this context, and you're somebody who lives in the news, and this isn't exactly on the other side of the country. This guy was ordered out of his hotel room. He was screamed at by cops to lay down in the hall on his face. He, at some point, broke down and started just crying. What do you want me to do? He had so many sort of different mixed message commands from the cops, you know, on your face, get up, get on your knees, crawl toward me, put your hands up, crawl, don't put your hands down, you know, whatever. And eventually they just blew him away. They literally executed this guy laying in a pair of basketball trunks with no shirt on, nothing in his hands, no footwear, no anything. They literally executed. And there were six cops in the hall, and they weren't holding handguns. They were holding.
Where did the video come from?
The video came from the camera.
The cops had cameras.
Cops had cameras.
Oh, so they were recording what they were doing.
They were recording. I can show you 20 or 30 seconds of it. And again, it's the most disturbing cop, again, not killing, shooting. It's an execution of a citizen by the police force. Never seen it brought up on the news. Now,
if he had been a black person,
well,
remember Walter Scott, the guy that was shot in the back, black man that got out of his car. The police came up to him, and rather than cooperate, he gets out of the car and starts running.
Right.
And he got shot in the back.
Right.
And the officer was prosecuted, and eventually he pled guilty to second-degree homicide, I think it was. So my point, Adam, though, it does happen. Of course there are some bad cops. And the answer is, make sure that we try to tape everything.
Right.
Here in Rialto, California, it's a city of about 100,000 people, 68,000 people, something like that. The police were mandated for a year to wear body cams. They didn't want to at first. And after a year, they evaluated the results. The accusations of force declined 90%. Use of force declined 40%. Now, why? Because the civilians realized they were being watched. They stopped lying about the officers, and they behaved better. And as a result, the officers didn't need to resort to the force to the degree that they did before they got the body cams. Their training was the same. They didn't do anything any different. The civilians reacted differently. The reason I'm mentioning this is, while I recommend very strongly that these body cams are there, the beneficiary will principally be the cops, not the civilians, because by and large, the cops are doing what they're trained to do. Apply force in an escalating fashion depending upon the conduct of the suspect, of the civilian. And so their training went in, and you saw that the complaints fell dramatically, because it is a crime to falsely accuse an officer of using force against you. And these people realize they might be prosecuted if they lie. They stop lying.
I will play you this clip. Before I do it, I will tell you that what angers me is that CNN and all the major news outlets claim to be sort of champions for justice. And if someone is shot by the cops and that's an abuse of power, then they're going to sound the alarm and ring the bell and bring it to the light. And that's their job. which is commendable, but you must do it when any citizen is shot. You cannot simply do it when a black citizen is shot. I'll show you the clip here. Oh, he is wearing a shirt, I believe. He's has his hands up as high as he can have them. You can play it. Go ahead. Sorry.
Do not put your hands down for any reason. You think you're going to fall, you better fall on your face. Your hands go back in the small of your back or down. We are going to shoot you. Do you understand me?
Yes, sir.
Crawl towards me. Crawl towards me!
Yes, sir.
Don't go!
Oh, my goodness.
They just killed him. Okay. Is that the worst police shooting you've ever seen in your life?
It's up there. I think the Rodney King beating, although he wasn't shot, was one of the worst things I'd ever seen. I was in Phoenix.
Well, you don't, in terms of police shootings.
It doesn't get much much worse than that.
I was guy crawling and crying toward you, and you blow him away.
Regarding why there isn't any
You've never
interest,
seen that clip?
No.
You've never heard it reported on any news outlet?
I was in.
That happened 2 years ago.
Let me see if you know this one. This is about 2 years ago. Fresno. I my show was carried there. I was up there for an event. And about 3 weeks earlier, a 19-year-old white teenager at a gas station, unarmed, was asked to get out of the car, and he's waving his arms around, not following instructions, and they blew him away. Now, yep. that was in the gray area-ish, but if that had been a black suspect, Anderson Cooper, Van Jones, Cuomo, all the guys would have been there. My mom used to say this, when a white person does something wrong, he's just a dead fly. We were watching a high-speed chase once, my mom and I were. My mom loved watching these high-speed, these long chases we have here in L.A. Some white guy, we didn't know his race at the time, was driving a truck for hours and hours and hours, police pursuing him. Finally, he gets out, and he has something in his hand, not quite sure what it is. It might be a weapon. And they shot him, and turned out they shot him 41 times. Small little article in the newspaper about the number of times he was shot, and they just moved on. I'm not saying he shouldn't have been shot because he did have something in his hand. My point is, if that had been a black person, they'd have counted the number of blows, they'd have been talking about police force and whether or not there was sufficient force being used. But as a white guy, as my mom says, just a dead fly.
Right. So what are these news outlets doing, and isn't it irresponsible because you're inflaming – I don't blame the viewer. The viewer sits in front of the TV, turns on NBC or MSNBC, watches the news. They have a system that sorts out the Daniel Shavers being executed in hallways while he's crying and crawling on his knees and begging for his life with his hands. There's no more compliance that guy could have done than put his hands above his head and crawl toward them. They have some sort of system that separates all of those and only shows men of color being shot and then spoon feeds it to the audience. Of course the audience is outraged.
And if anything, white suspects have a bigger beef than black ones do. Because as I said, and this tape proves it, a cop is far more hesitant to pull the trigger on a black suspect than a white suspect. I suspect if this had been a black guy, they would behave differently. Because they would have been reamed by Van Jones, reamed by CNN. They would have been made public celebrities. They possibly could have lost their pension. Their dog wouldn't smell them. Their neighbors would reject them.
This went to trial, and the cops were acquitted. This shooting, they were not convicted.
Well,
I don't know how much you can give me the official particulars on that, Chris. But
did they believe he had a weapon? I mean, what? There must have been some sort of defense the cops gave. What was it? I know they said they were in reasonable fear of their lives, but for what reason did the guy have a gun at first? Was he running at first? Give me something.
Yes,
there had to be more to it.
I'm going
to
give you something.
All right.
This guy worked as a pest control guy. Believe it or not, he had like a pellet gun, and he would go into these big box stores like Costco and stuff. And I believe his job was to like shoot the pigeons who were sort of nesting or living or taking residence up at the thing. Mm-hmm. So he had a pellet gun. So you're right. Somebody called up who was outside of the of the Days Inn or whatever the motel he was in and said, hey, I saw a guy up there and he seemed to have a gun.
Right.
So the cops heard about the gun. Now, they brought him out. They brought his he was in there with a woman. She walked past. He walked past. What you saw in the hallway, though, was 20 minutes of him laying down and begging for his life and crying and holding his hands up and doing everything. They had heard a report of a gun, but clearly 10 minutes into him laying on the, in the halls, there wasn't anything on him,
right.
And they blew him away. Now, the cops were acquitted, and he's dead, and there's a civil thing that's going on now. But the point is Larry Elder, whose business it is to know everything, and is especially up on cop shootings and things of that nature.
My reaction, based on what you've told me, is this seems like a suspicious shooting, but I would need to have more facts.
Understood, but you've never heard of it.
No.
And that's my point,
mm-hmm.
because where would you find it? Not on any news outlets,
right.
because it doesn't fit the narrative.
That's right. It doesn't fit the script. The script is that the police are out to get black people. They're not out to get white people. They're out to get black people.
And
that
news
doesn't fit.
Right. And news agencies aren't supposed to have a narrative. They're just supposed to report the news. That's my beef.
Well, the Washington Post, Adam, looked at the 2008 coverage of the race between Obama and McCain. The ombudsperson is named Deborah Howe, was named. She's no longer there. She looked at the newspaper and said, wow, we had more pictures of Obama on the front page than McCain, more flattering pictures of Obama on the front page than McCain, more stories of Obama than McCain, more positive stories of Obama and McCain. And to her credit, she wrote two articles criticizing her own newspaper for doing this. One of the editors fired back and said, we're not garment cutters. We are making a product that our readers want to read. And I went on the air and I read what he said. And I said, at least the guy is being honest. He's not all the news that's fit to print, which is the slogan of the New York Times. He's not giving us that BS. He's saying, I'm crafting a product that my mostly left-wing readers want to read. And they want to read about Obama. They want to read about a 70-year-old white guy named John McCain. And that's what we're doing here. That's what he said. At least he was honest. So I don't believe the news has an obligation to, quote, report the news. They're a profit-sharing concern, and I understand that they've got to put booties in the seats, and that means attract as many eyeballs as they can. But don't tell me it's news. You've got a bias, and your bias is against Republicans. The Washington Post has never endorsed a Republican for president. Never. The New York Times has not since 1956. So don't give me this stuff about fair and balanced, who, what, where, when, and why. You have a bias, and that's why we on my side of the aisle are ticked off.
Well, let's talk about what you think. I want to talk vouchers with you. You guys can listen to Take a Knee, my motivational podcast, and hear us get into school vouchers for a little bit on that program. But Larry's one of the people who's educated me on school choice and school vouchers. I think we had Barbara Boxer in here with Dr. Drew. We can figure that one out. I was not in the studio, but I said to Dr. Drew, I said, why don't you ask Barbara Boxer and her daughter who was coming in and doing it. I said, why don't you just ask them about school vouchers, see what they think about school vouchers. Why? The thing that's I really do have the taking the crazy pills on are things like school choice. Mm-hmm. I cannot believe that you would for political reasons throw this many kids under the bus because you were mobbed up with the school teachers unions or whatever it is. I get the part where someone wants to build a bullet train, but you don't want the bullet train for political reasons or whatever it is. But this is kids. This is education. This is the future. And some of these kids are literally going to die because they're going to drop out. They're going to get into drugs. They're going to get into gangs. They're going to get shot on the street, whatever it is. I can't believe that when it comes to kids, that both sides don't just kind of come together and go, look, we're going to crunch some numbers and we're going to figure it out. If school choice and vouchers work, then so be it. And if they don't, then it won't. But let's at least be intellectually honest here and go with the best system. Now, for me, I'm all about competition, and I realize what that is. Now, if you said to me, hey, Adam, you're in charge. Should other podcasts be allowed to exist? I'd say, well, no, it's dangerous and it's irresponsible. It takes money out of my pocket. Right. No. And by the way, I'm all for the listeners. I want everything that's best for the listeners. But in terms of Larry Elder or Joe Rogan or any of these guys, get them out of here. No choice. But do not worry. You pay me and I will provide you a premium podcast product 5 days a week. But if you want to start having other guys get out there and compete against me, that's irresponsible, and the listeners are going to suffer.
Yeah,
That's okay. If I made that announcement, you would say, "Well, of course, you just want more listeners, and of course, it's not going to hurt the listeners to have a choice between listening to your podcast and listening to Larry Elder's podcast or Mark Maron's podcast. Of course, this is about you and you're just protecting your job. And if you get paid $10 for every listener you have, well, then that's just money out of your pocket. So I think we understand there's an agenda and you're saying it's dangerous and irresponsible to have other podcasts compete against mine. I mean, think about what you're asking for in almost any other realm of our society. I want to know all about, I'm sorry, what clip do you have worked up there?
Oh, this is the Barbara Boxer.
Oh, we have Barbara. So yeah. I said to Drew, well, I just ask them what their take is, because I'm a little confused why more politicians wouldn't be down with some choice. But here was her answer and her daughter's answer to Dr. Drew.
And what's wrong with school vouchers, he wants to know. Why not school vouchers if people want to use the free market?
Oh, the problem, I'll tell you the problem with it. It's taxpayer money, and it's going to schools, away from schools. It's money taking out of schools where 95% of the children in the country go. I have no problem with charters, but I think to take people out to private school, it's taxpayers' funding that's going there, and I think that's wrong.
I would just say to Adam, update your spiel, dude.
That's
like a 10, 12-year-old debate, really.
The voucher system?
Yeah. Wow.
I thought the charter, let's get a little more progressive.
Well, she went to school in where was she at?
Marin County.
Yeah. So it's wrong side of the tracks, side of the Golden Gate Bridge.
I have a number of wealthy friends who live in L.A. Not a single one of them who has school-age kids has his or her kid in a public school after elementary school. Not one.
Well, I want to hear how you would address that.
Mm-hmm.
And vouchers and choice and all that. First, I'll tell you about MedMen. MedMen, today's cannabis consumers are everywhere and everyone. Let's drop the labels. Teachers, executives, parents. At MedMen, you are called the customer. There's something for everyone, whether you're new to the cannabis or familiar. You know, things like lotions, edibles, vape pens, bath bombs, and more. Touch screens that allow you to view in-depth product info, and red-shirted staff that's incredibly knowledgeable, puts you at ease. So whatever you need, they have it there. This is well-lit, big windows, done up like a Mac store, not the seedy, dicey stucco boxes from your childhood. And you can check out one of their 8 locations, L.A., Orange County, San Diego, or you can go online and visit them at MedMen.com. Find the store nearest you at MedMen.com. Dawson?
Visit MedMen and mention Adam Carolla at checkout for $10 off your order. Check out MedMen today.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with part two of the great Eldersky. Larry Elder, right after this.
Hey, this is Stephanie Wilder Taylor.
And Lynette Carolla.
And we're For Crying Out Loud. Listen to our show because there's lots of swearing.
Lots of stories.
Lots of personal information.
That you don't really need to know, but we tell you anyway.
Yeah.
So check us out on iTunes and Podcast One.
For Crying Out Loud with Lynette Carolla and Stephanie Wilder Taylor every Tuesday and Friday at Carolla Digital, Podcast One, and Apple Podcasts.